Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Today's episode is a tribute to a lost friend, Dr. Marcia Ryu, helped me a great deal in the early days of the show. Since her passing, I've been trying to find a way to honor the memory of an amazing advocate for the disability community. In this segment of our show, Paula Hearn will be sharing a little bit of her experience working with Dr. Marcia Ryu as part of a tribute. So, Marcia touched your work a lot over the years. Can you tell me a little bit about some of her influence?
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to work with Marcia in a number of spaces. First, when I was doing my master's with the Critical Disabilities Studies program at York, and she was drawn to the program initially because I wanted to focus on disability with an international development twist and human rights. And DRPI was really attractive to me, and that, of course, came with Marcia. So Marcia supervised my master's research, and I had the opportunity to work with her as a research assistant on the project. And then as I was wrapping up my studies, the coordinator position with the Disability Rights Promotion International project came up, and I ended up taking on that position as the coordinator for DRPI. And then we spent, 5 to 6 years of working together on DRPI. So I've had this really great opportunity to be a learner from her as a teacher, for her to guide my academic work and to explore new ways of engaging with disability and theoretically, and then on the other side, be able to have more of a practical putting those theories into practice of creating monitoring systems and create change at a local level and an international level with her, and just so many incredible experiences along the way. We had a lot of challenges that we tackled together and found together, from creating space with the DRPI work, which focused on creating a monitoring system where persons with disabilities could have a space where they could monitor their own rights and launch the implementation of the CRPD, the convention. There's lots of challenges that come with working in other countries. One of the big challenges that we faced together, and we really complemented each other, was on the DRPI AWARE project, which was focused on employment for persons with disabilities. The biggest challenges we really faced there were around shaping and changing perspectives on employment and what that looks for equitable and equal employment for persons with disabilities, to change the mindset of employers. And her and I kind of worked really well on tackling some of the challenges around conversations with employers, how to include persons with disabilities in the workspace, how to attack it from an accessible and accommodation perspective, finding ways to reach media and reach a large population with these ways to rethink employment. And, you know, we face so many challenges along in those pathways of stereotypes of, you know, why would we hire someone with a disability when we can hire someone without a disability? You know, what are the amazing potential that persons can bring to jobs? And rethinking it from an HR, human resource perspective. And those challenges really, Marcia was always so direct and strategic around how to approach them. And she always went for the higher fruit on the tree. She wasn't interested always in picking the lower hanging fruit. She wanted to tackle the tough conversations, the tough challenges, because she knew when she created change at a higher level or created change within maybe a larger employer, that's when we can start seeing change on lower levels and other levels. And she wasn't afraid to do that.
So, because of those incidents, that she was always pushing people to reach their best, is there any individual success story that stands out for you?
I think one of some of the best stories, I wouldn't say totally individual, but more collective, of the amount of people that were hired through the DRPI Aware project. You know, hundreds of people were employed during this 5-year project where in India, Bangladesh, Nepal, and it was really a testament and a success of the change and the dialogues we're having on an individual basis with employers, but then added up in not like a full systemic way, but created change within the cities we're working in, where persons with disabilities are being included into workplaces and being hired on long-term positions. Their skills were being recognized as skills and valuable people to companies. And that's probably some of the biggest success that came out of the work that we did there. And, you know, we also had lots of other successes with our regional offices, with collecting, monitoring information and data related to the CRPD and human rights, and we produced the partnerships with collaborations with other organizations around these really strong evidence-based monitoring reports that could be used at United Nations level to speak around the situation of persons with disabilities. And those live on. And the monitoring system is a success story that can be used going forward, that her and Blank Lindquist created so many years ago. But you know, it's really a testament to her legacy of what she created through DRPI and the monitoring system that now exists.
So is there anything in particular, any lesson that she taught you over the years that you want to share in terms of keeping her legacy going for the future of advocacy?
Yeah, I think for me, Marcia really taught me, and I saw her live this, was to be bold, to not worry about too much about repercussions, in the sense of, you know, this is bad, but to think about the political aspect and to be strategic in decisions and the way that you create advocacy moments, but to be bold and to step forward in those moments, to take the risk and to say things to disturb the tide, and not to be overly diplomatic in the sense that you might miss an opportunity for actually creating change. And I saw her do this so many times where she said things that disrupted the norm that created change. And I think that's what we need to remember and carry with us, that always going around the straight line, straight path is good, but to always to think beyond, to reach for that higher fruit, and to not take the easy road, but to think about how you can actually create change through being a little, disrupting the norm and being on a different road or a different path than what others might be on. And that's how she got things done.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thanks, Harry.
In this segment of our show, Sean Wiltshire will be sharing a little bit of his experience working with Dr. Marcia Ryu. So, can you tell me a little bit about some of your experiences working with Marcia?
Well, I was, in thinking about talking to you today about Marcia, I was trying to think of, what kind of words would I use to describe her, and I think the one that I settled on was fierce. I had never met anybody like Marcia, and I had never had the opportunity to kind of delve into things that really were beyond the scope of the work that I was doing, and the adventure we went on, and I call it that because that's what she asked me. One day in July, she called my cell phone, and she had gotten my name from somebody else, and she kind of interviewed me for almost 40 minutes on a Friday. And at the end of it, I said, "Marcia, how can I help you?" And she said, "Sean, would you like to go on an adventure?" And I thought, "Okay, sure, I'll bite." And the very next morning, I was booked on a flight to Mumbai. I had to look up some of the places she took me on a map. I sat in a meeting, one of my most vivid memories. We were in Bangladesh and we were working with the garment factories to both improve accessibility and improve job opportunities. And we were in a meeting with the Bangladesh Garment Manufacturers and Exporters Association. They employ a couple of million people. There's 12 men in Bangladesh sitting around this huge boardroom table in downtown Dhaka. And I watched Marcia take them on. And she told them in no uncertain terms that their business model of not being inclusive was wrong. I've never seen anything like it. I have seen this individual take on border guards when they told her she couldn't do something. I have seen her command a room full of bankers to get them to understand how diversity increases profitability. And getting the adventure with her was not only to go all these amazing places, whether it was the United Nations in Vienna or Washington, D.C., or a garment factory in Bangladesh. It was what I learned from being with her and watching what she did. It was quite honestly, how do you talk about somebody who literally changed how you view yourself in the world? And that's what Marcia did for a lot of folks.
So, what do you think you'll do in your future work to sort of keep those lessons she shared with you going?
Well, I always said to her, she asked me to go on one trip as a volunteer, and in the end, I'd gone on 8 trips. I'd done a couple hundred thousand miles with her. And I will never forget the basic lesson she taught me, which was that no matter who you are, you're the same as everybody else. And I watched a woman who has a doctorate from Berkeley, who is the Order of Canada, who was a very, very important person in the law, in the development of law in Canada. I watched her talk to folks in Bangladesh that were acid survivors, poverty on a level that is hard for most people in the world to understand, And the level of respect that she treated people with is something I will always try and emulate. I hope that I could live up to, you know, the half of the reputation of Marcia. But what she did do in the end was, as I go forward, I no longer think things are as big as they were. I live in Newfoundland and Labrador. I live on the edge of the Atlantic Ocean. And she helped me see that I could make change in another part of the world as well as my own community. So that was her gift, I think, was getting people to see the things that they couldn't see in themselves. And that's why she was pushing you. She pushed us a lot. I worked really hard.
So do you think that lesson of pushing people is something you can translate in your own work, as in she pushed you to reach your best? Do you think you can carry that forward for someone who may need sort of their own Marcia?
Yeah, she used to say to me, we have so little time, Sean, to make change. And so I always try and think about the opportunity that I have to support somebody else's idea about change. Because it's not only my idea about change, it's other people's lived experience, it's other people's ideals. And Marcia taught me that, you know, having a different opinion or seeing it a different way isn't necessarily a bad thing. It opens the dialogue to that advancement. And she always looked at the opportunity to talk to folks, whether that was a banker or somebody who lived on the street in India. She took the opportunity to see their skill, the things they didn't see. I mean, you know, Cam, it was so amazing because I had worked doing all kinds of work in Canada and Europe. And when I first went to Asia with Marcia, I had never worked so hard in my whole entire career. 16, 17-hour days, and you were so busy. And the adrenaline that you would be functioning on, because these were intense trips. We would be seeing folks. We would be interacting. And sometimes we had trouble keeping up. And Marcia was always the one who said, we have so little time, let's keep moving. And we did. We did what she asked because we saw the value not only in what she did, but in her respect for us. You know, she was giving, she was challenging, but she was fierce.
So you could send any message about her legacy and the need for more people like her work to continue. What would you say?
Just because sometimes people think you're in the minority doesn't mean you're wrong. Having an opinion about what is right, what is just, what's needed, isn't a left-wing opinion. It's an opinion of a society that cares. And I think that that was Marcia's legacy, is that we care, we have to demonstrate it, we have to make the change, we have to build that inclusive society that we all talk about. And that takes work. And Marcia always used to say, change is messy. And so I take that as her legacy. For me, is to continue to drive change, continue to give voice to folks in the community, and continue to do the work. I've been doing the work for a long time, 30 years, and I feel as invigorated. I think of Marcia a lot, and I think of what would she have said, what would she have done, and it gives me pause, and it gives me an opportunity to both, you know, take the learnings that she gave me and apply them. And I think that that's probably what's valuable, because she did that for everybody. And whether that was her doctoral students, and I wasn't an academic. I was somebody who worked in the community. So I had a different relationship with her, but she treated me just the same and you know, took the opportunity to share her experiences and to share her knowledge. And I think that that will be also her legacy.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. to CJAM's Top 12 Countdown. I'm your host, Taya, and every week we will be counting down CJAM's most played albums of the week. You'll hear from a variety of genres, lots of local music, and our programmers' favorite tunes. CJAM's Top 12 only plays the best of the best, so tune in every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. only on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor and in Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, as part of our tribute to Dr. Marcia Ryu, we heard from her colleagues, Paula Hearn and Sean Wiltshire. In this segment of our show, Hannah Hickey will be sharing her memories of working with Dr. Marcia Ryu. So, can you tell me a little bit about your memories, Marcia?
Well, I remember clearly when I challenged her on her monitoring model and the fact that it didn't include minorities. It was more of a mainstream approach than looking at how to include all disabled into the monitoring focus. She was open to that. She then went ahead and invited a number of us to go and have a corridor around a discussion. And then from there we wrote that book. What we're not seeing in Aotearoa New Zealand at the moment is the implementation of different groups into the monitoring focus. And that's sad because I know that Marcia was quite shocked to see how it was being developed, and it wasn't with the people nothing about us without us focus, which was definitely her goal when she wrote that monitoring report for everybody. So for me, the memory was that she provided a tool, and as yet we still haven't really fully embraced it, but she gave us something that will make all the difference to our communities if it's implemented properly.
So what steps can be taken to implement it and to honour the legacy of the work that she was involved in?
I think we need to be advocating to our governments, the states, that the thing that Marcia did want to do was not to take the power away from disabled people, but that this was designed for disabled to be able to have the power, the autonomy themselves, to be able to function, run their lives and live a good life, and that the states that don't implement this properly have been disingenuous. I think we honour Marcia by implementing them.
So, what are some of the...
Is that simple?
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, sorry. So, what are some of the roadblocks that might create potential challenges to implementation?
It's very much a power game. When the state's got the power, they've denied disabled people their own voice, their own ministries, their own ability to run their lives. But when the individual has the power, that increases their ability. So we need to do the power shifting, which is the power and control of the state, the providers, the non-disability sector, to give disabled the power and the control back so that we can show them what is needed to be done to give us a fully inclusive society. Unless that happens, we are still very much dependent on the state and on society to include us, whereas that should be a natural now with this new, with Marcia's monitoring report. That was definitely the way that we saw it anyway.
So when she did the report, did it change your own thinking about the situation at all?
Definitely. I mean, it gave us a focus around us having that voice, having those rights, something that was actually devoid from a lot of us for many, many decades, really. The most important aspect we had of the whole convention was that we finally had a voice, had a say, and an opportunity to be included. And the state has still derailed that. Marcia's monitoring report was a way of being able to highlight where the gaps were and close those gaps. But instead, what we're seeing, countries are now putting DNRs on people without asking them. We're not seeing the autonomy that we should be having with the UNCRPD.
So she was actually, she was very connected to the work around the convention, if I'm not mistaken. She had...
Yes, she was. She was extremely, that's why it was such an important tool to be able to use, and it was part of that. You get the UNCRPD. The country supports it. They then ratify it, and then you bring in the optional protocols. And the monitoring report should have been brought in at that stage when a country, you know, signs off. They then make it part of their protocols. Then they start to implement it in law. The monitoring report was supposed to provide a tool which gave disabled people the ability to say to the state, no, you're doing it wrong in this area, this is what we recommend. But the state, well, for us in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we haven't seen that implemented as we would have liked to have. And that's despite winning, you know, a huge reward for that. New Zealand won the Human Rights Award from the UN at the time. Fantastic, but we haven't actually seen anything implemented as it should be to the same degree.
So, do you find that the whole pandemic situation has had any impact on implementation of improvements for persons with disabilities?
Yes.
So,
yes, it took actually away. They put on DNRs on people, particularly people with intellectual disabilities. So, in the UK, that's happened. In some parts of the US, that's happened. I know in Canada, there's been this debate around euthanasia and providing disability supports. What it's done is as soon as the health system went into crisis, they immediately reverted back to not apply the UNCRPD. So they brought in DNRs without talking to disabled, without giving disabled the right to live. We've not been pushing for the right to die. We're pushing for the right to live, for protections. And during a pandemic, it actually showed which countries were protecting their citizens best. And I have to say it, despite our country not really implementing the monitoring report, Aotearoa New Zealand has protected its disabled people.
So
we don't yet have DNRs on us because the health system hasn't been overwhelmed like it has in other countries. And even though she was going through her journey as she when she was alive, she still pushed to have even resources set up for disabled to be able to work in this area, research. She did it in a way that was designed to try and ensure the voices of disabled sit at that table. And that's the last legacy she has left us. We're still working on it. There's a group of us doing the work, and she still kept going, even though she was terminal. She still did what she wanted to do to ensure that our communities have voices that have been missing for so long. For that, I'll always remember her.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Certainly.
Although I was never one of her students, you could say I learned a very important life lesson from her. I learned to reach beyond the things that I thought were possible. She had this way of encouraging me with some of the most far-fetched ideas one could ever have. Remember one night I said, I'd love to interview someone responsible for helping write the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. She just said, fine, I'll introduce you to someone. Another time, I wanted to interview an entire class in disability studies, see what would happen, see what they agreed on and what they didn't. She helped make this possible. She believed in the rights of persons with disabilities. She believed in my work. And I would say that I am a far better journalist because of the things that she taught me. She introduced me to the most remarkable people on earth. The truth is, she had the drive and the determination to move mountains. That's what the disability community needs. Needs people who aren't willing to accept just what's handed to them out of a sense of guilt or tokenism. Needs people who can look at the nature of the situation, address the realities, and come up with a meaningful plan for a better tomorrow. My pledge is that I will not let her legacy be forgotten. And I hope that my work proves worthy the kind of life she led. Wherever you are, my friend, you have my thanks. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.